Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of February 19th, 2019. Now, do you know much about MOX? Well, the Mixed Oxide Fuel Fabrication Facility project, which was meant to convert weapons-grade plutonium into reactor fuel, is officially dead at the Savannah River site in Aiken after years of attempts to keep it alive despite massive cost overruns and delays. Now, more than 1,000 workers lost their jobs, but there could be a new national security project coming to SRS. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections instead of wondering about that Fox News host who bragged about not washing his hands for 10 years. Not even after handling raw meat or using the bathroom, dude? Or while you recover from your sweet President's Day party. I couldn't make it because, like President Howard Taft, I was stuck in the tub. / reporting this podcast for you. In a tub. And now, quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Greenwood Index Journal reports that the South Carolina Lead is coming to T.W. Boone's in Greenwood this Thursday, February 21st at 6 p.m. That's right, I'll be hosting our live taping, complete with giveaways, trivia, and a great discussion about the 2020 race so far. The Post and Courier's Jamie Lovegrove will be in attendance, and also a possible mystery guest. Also, Russ McKinney will be there with some great trivia, so come on out for some pints, politics, and fellowship. RSVPs are recommended on scetv.org/sclead. Number two, following up on a story we discussed on the Lead, the Greenville News' Project Taken has spurred action among lawmakers to introduce a comprehensive civil asset forfeiture reform bill that would regulate civil forfeiture in the state. The news reports that in its most fundamental reform, the bill would eliminate civil forfeiture altogether, creating instead a system of criminal forfeiture. If a person is found guilty of a felony that includes forfeiture as a punishment, their forfeiture case would be tried after the criminal conviction. That change, reform advocates say, would eliminate forfeiture cases where law enforcement seizes property without filing a criminal case or seeking to prosecute a person, or cases where police seize cash but only charge a person with a misdemeanor drug possession. Number three, following up on last week's episode where we mentioned that $1,000 Dominion checks that aren't coming, the Post and Courier reports that Dominion filed plans with the Public Service Commission to start a four-week advertising campaign explaining why SCE&G's 700,000 customers are not getting checks. The ads will run on television and newspapers and on social media. The state-approved deal without the checks saves customers more money over two decades, $1,700 out of pocket versus $4,000. And number four, WYFF News reports that after 2 months, it finally got a list of concealed weapons permit holders that had their permits revoked from State Law Enforcement Division. The list showed law enforcement officers across the state revoked 533 concealable weapon permits in 2017. WYFF found that domestic violence charges were linked to nearly 3 out of every 10 revocations. And like Marie Kondo always says, does the Lead bring you joy? Then bury it. Chances are you've heard of or read the word MOX before, but do you know what it is? Well, one thing it is not going to be completed. That's because after 11 years working on the Mixed Oxide Fuel Fabrication Facility, known as MOX, at the Savannah River site, the project has been terminated. The MOX grand plan was part of a 2000 agreement with Russia to convert 34 metric tons of weapons-grade plutonium into reactor fuel. The project was originally estimated to cost $4 billion, but as of 2018, only 70% was completed, and $12 billion would have been required to finish it. So MOX is like the VC summer, hold my beer. Now, these massive cost overruns and delays sound familiar, prompted the Obama administration to begin considering alternatives, which spurred fights and lawsuits waged by South Carolina's congressional delegation and then Governor Nikki Haley. The MOX project was put into a cold standby in 2015, funding started to dwindle, and alternatives were sought, and the Russians pulled out in 2016 from the agreement. Even Donald Trump's Department of Energy did not save the project. With jobs at risk, the future of Savannah Riverside was looking questionable, but despite the 1,000-plus layoffs, a new project is ramping up that is expected to provide stability for decades. Now, to discuss all things SRS and nuclear, we brought in the Aiken Standard's Colin Demarest, the only reporter in South Carolina who follows this topic regularly. Colin, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So, let's start with MOX. There's a lot to cover, but how big of a blow was this termination, the whole project, to the Savannah Riverside, to the Aiken area that you cover?
The Savannah Riverside as a whole is a huge employer in our region, in the two-state region, in the CSRA, the Central Savannah River area. And MOX employed about 1,500 to 1,800. That number fluctuated. I'd say that the actual cancellation was kind of like a big punch in the gut, but not necessarily a big surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of defrayed the punch, if that makes sense.
I mean, they saw it coming. I mean, when did it really become obvious that this was going to be terminated?
Well, so in May 2018, Energy Secretary Rick Perry went to congressional defense committees and told them, hey, I'm going to terminate the MOX project. That power was given to him in the National Defense Authorization Act. And basically, he just had to prove that there was a cheaper alternative. He did that in May, the same time that the pit production recommendation was made. And then it took about 5 months for the National Nuclear Security Administration to actually deliver termination.
Mm-hmm.
So that May event kind of raised the flag, like, hey, this is going to happen. And then in October 2018 is when they actually delivered.
So like all last year was pretty much on eggshells, essentially,
yeah.
Knowing that was pretty much come
yeah.
down. Because funding had been dwindling, obviously.
Yeah, and I mean, Perry's authorization was kind of contested and people were trying to fight back against it. And, you know, there was lawsuits and all that. But eventually the NNSA got the go-ahead to do it.
So then, I mean, I know there's a lot of back and forth. I mean, I think Lindsey Graham was up there, was, you know, having lunch or something with the president, mm-hmm. and Perry was there too.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you're talking about the pit production talk, which we'll
yeah.
get to, which is the next project for SRS. But do you think that was maybe part of some sort of deal or some sort of way to kind of incentivize the whole loss of MOX, essentially?
I don't know if you could call it a deal. Mm-hmm. If it was, I don't know. I haven't gotten any confirmation on that. But it is nice that you take one project away and then you have this recommendation for this long enduring mission at the site that could kind of carry on that weight that we lost with MOX.
And that was pretty much the reason that MOX fell, didn't really get to where it needed to be. It was because of the cost overruns, because it was, you know, billions of dollars. I mean, what really was maybe the nail in the coffin for MOX?
I mean, I know Secretary Perry, he said it's expensive. It's been expensive. It's been too long. We have a far cheaper alternative, which they call dilute and dispose.
Mm-hmm.
He said that was about half the life cycle cost. And I mean, we're talking billions. So that's a huge scale.
Mm-hmm.
I think it had a lot to do with cost on the official level, on the reason why they did that.
And so, I mean, do we see any comparisons to like VC Summer? I mean, it's not a boondoggle here, or is it, I know you don't like to use that word.
I don't like the word boondoggle. Sometimes I think that's a little bit of a radical word. I haven't drawn personally any connections in my writing to VC Summer. I think, I don't know, like one's really like on the federal national security level, and then one's a South Carolina power project, essentially. I mean, they're both mm-hmm. nuclear related, but I think they're not necessarily connectable.
And I was going to say, I mean, when we look at the impacts of MOX, I mean, it's not like you're going to see an increase in your bill, you know,
no.
because we don't have a bill.
No.
But it's like, is there any direct, besides that direct impact to Aiken, for example? I mean, is there anything we feel statewide because of this? Or
I mean,
do we just have a couple extra tons of uranium, plutonium laying around?
I would say the real hit is the job market. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you have more than 1,100 people who have either been laid off or have received layoff notifications, which effectively mean they are laid off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the real hit. And people work at the site from Georgia. They drive from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
SRS always has this chart that they show. This is where our workers are from. This is where our contractors are from. And it's a pretty big net it casts. So
definitely an impact for a lot of areas surrounding SRS.
Mm-hmm.
So moving forward then, you know, like we said, Lindsey Graham really fought that battle. He's been
mm-hmm.
recently around here talking about upcoming projects. Do we know what's going on with the plutonium that's in the state? How much plutonium is in the state and like what the plans are for it at this point?
So I do not know off the top of my head exactly how much plutonium is stored at SRS. The DOE is under a court order to get at least 1 metric ton out by 2020, and out by, I mean like just out of the state in general. And they shipped a half metric ton to the Nevada National Security Site prior to November 2018. So they're halfway there to meeting that requirement. At the end of last year, near the end of last year, I spoke with a National Nuclear Security Administration spokesperson, and that spokesperson said, hey, we're going to get half out by the end of 2018 and half out by the end of 2019. And I followed back, I looped back and kind of did an update story on that, and they said they're still going to meet that requirement.
Mm-hmm. And now that was plutonium for the MOX project specifically?
I do not know that off the top of my head. I mean, there's a lot of nuance there, and I haven't really delved into that yet.
But long story short, Nevada's pissed off, right?
Long story short is that Nevada is not happy that they sent plutonium to the NNSS. It was sent prior to November 2018, which is interesting because that happened before Nevada sued the federal government to prevent that from happening. Mm-hmm. And that whole time, no one knew that and by no one, I mean the general public, no one knew that that shipment had occurred. And in that course of that lawsuit to prevent that shipment, if that makes sense, it came about that, hey, we did ship this. And that's when everyone started getting angry. That's when the Nevada governor started writing letters, and that's when the senators started writing letters, and that's when the local government started, out in Nevada, that is, started writing letters saying, what are you guys doing? I wrote a story the other week, and the governor, Steve Sisolak, I hope I'm saying that right, mm-hmm. He basically said, we have no trust in DOE and NNSA anymore because you guys negotiated in bad faith. You guys were secretive. I mean, there's words like clandestine and covert and secret and kind of what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, like a very... I mean, obviously you have to do that for, you know, nuclear shipments, but I guess they're taking it to the level, and, you know, governors and certain agency heads know when nuclear movements are happening within their state, so I'm guessing they're probably a little annoyed that maybe it went a step further that they didn't even know about it.
From my personal perspective, I think it makes sense to keep weapons-grade nuclear shipments quiet.
I mean,
obviously, they're transported securely. The DOE has the OST, which is the Office of Secure Transportation, I believe. You might want to double-check that. But that whole department agency is tasked with secure transportation, mm-hmm. with getting material from point A to point B.
So, Nevada is pissed for a couple reasons, mostly because it's close to Las Vegas.
So it's northwest of Las Vegas. I haven't found anywhere in court documents where it's been disclosed what exact path mm-hmm. there was taken. But a lot of the concern is, hey, you guys came close to Nevada, a major... Las Vegas. That's a major tourist, residence. I mean, you have everyone kind of centered around there. And radiation exposure has been brought up. Mm-hmm. Although that the NNSA or the DOE would contend that was fully addressed in an environmental study they put out in July of 2018.
And then so kind of going back to the shipments and the future of, you know, what all that plutonium was supposed mm-hmm. to be, is that waste going to be stored there temporarily? Because if it's supposed to be diluted and go to New Mexico, doesn't that mean it's kind of like a halfway point?
It's a complicated plan.
We might get in the weeds right now.
Yeah, this is way in the weeds, but it's very important to kind of discuss this. So the plan was to take that one metric ton, which they're required to get out, take it and ship it to either Nevada National Security Site or the Pantex plant in Texas. That half metric ton was sent to Nevada, and there's still half, as far as I know, mm-hmm. there's still a half metric ton in South Carolina of that one metric total. Eventually, that one metric ton is going to be repurposed for pit production at Los Alamos National Lab in New Mexico. So it's kind of a three-site approach that kind of the two gets shipped from one site to one or two sites and then to one end site, essentially. Mm-hmm.
And then kind of talking about what we're talking about, pit production, give us some illumination about what that is and then obviously what role SRS is going to be playing that. Obviously, you said Los Alamos, but
so
SRS's new mission.
The easy way to understand it and how I always phrase it is plutonium pits are nuclear weapon cores. People sometimes refer to them as triggers. They help nuclear weapons go boom, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Big boom.
Very big boom. We need pits. According to, you know, defense and all that and the 2018 nuclear posture review, we need 80 pits per year produced to help modernize the nation's defense and weapons stockpile. pits aren't, we don't have the capability to produce 80 pits right now, mm-hmm. especially every year. So it's been recommended by the National Nuclear Security Administration and the Defense Department that we produce 50 pits per year at the Savannah River site and another 30 per year at Los Alamos National Lab in New Mexico. That goal needs to be attained by 2030. That's basically the easy way to kind of
and
break
so
that down.
Again, this again, you know, MOX wasn't even kind of dead yet, and then we were talking about ramping up pit production essentially. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, so MOX hadn't been officially terminated. That termination letter hadn't been delivered when the pit production recommendation was announced, because the pit production recommendation was made in May 2018, and then MOX was officially terminated in October 2018. So there's a 5-month difference there.
Now, I know you're talking about nuclear modernization, and you know, if you do read that nuclear posture review, which I recommend, it seems pretty interesting.
Oh, it's real juicy.
I mean, it's some good bedside reading. Is it just modernization of our stockpile, or is there a arms race going on too, especially when you know, look at stuff coming from the White House and treaties breaking down? Is it just modernization, or is it a ramp up?
So there was a lot of talk. I was in Washington, D.C. at a nuclear deterrence summit, and there was a lot of talk kind of about the future of missiles and defense and all that. So I'm probably not the right person to ask about a ramp up or, you know, an arms race or something like that. But there's definitely a significant modernization push. Every expert at the Nuclear Deterrence Summit in D.C. talked about modernization, modernization, modernization.
I mean, that's all you really need to do. I mean, we have plenty of nuclear weapons to kill the world a couple times over. It's like...
It's basically like, hey, our materials or whatever are old. Mm-hmm. Our infrastructure to produce those materials are old. I mean, some of these buildings, some of this infrastructure in the nuclear security enterprise date back to the Manhattan Project, date mm-hmm. back 30, 40 years. And it's starting to show according to that nuclear posture review.
And then I guess once you start looking at costs for some of these newer facilities like MOX, when you're looking at billions, I mean, that's... probably somewhat of a
deterrent. I mean, in 2017, the National Nuclear Security Administration, they did this analysis of alternatives. One of those slides said, hey, repurposing MOX for pit production would be in the billions. I mean, it would be a safe bet that it would be in the billions. Mm-hmm. But obviously, that's 2017. I don't know if that's changed. At the conference, they wouldn't provide a baseline cost, because I think that's still in fluctuation. Mm-hmm. So it's a big undertaking.
I was going to say, just kind of wrapping up, I mean, that's going to be a lot to change from one mission of, you know, repurposing plutonium to now finding a different use for plutonium, which would be in these triggers. So I'm guessing that's going to, you know, you have a lot of specialized equipment, specialized facilities that have to be reworked.
The repurposing will be very interesting to watch, because they're basically taking the bones of a very specialized nuclear facility and turning it into another very specialized nuclear facility.
What's the reaction been in the Aiken area? I mean, are they excited that this is going forward, that there's some sort of salvation?
People are very excited to bring a pit production mission. I mean, the pit production mission is not, it's not concrete. We are not for sure getting pit production. And I think that's very important to know. I mean, it was a recommended alternative. The Deputy Secretary of Energy, Dan Brouillette, he hasn't signed off, which is needed for critical decision one. That's a fancy term for let's move along. But I think a lot of people are excited about pit production coming, because it is jobs. It's a very long-term mission, because essentially as long as we need nuclear weapons, we need pits, unless there's some sort of radical change in the way we make weapons, as far as I understand it.
So it's just a matter of time, but it's looking like we're pretty much between us and Los Alamos. It's going to be us working together as far as everything's kind of...
Yeah, and at that nuclear deterrence summit, Peter Fonta, he's a very high-ranking, as far as I can tell, nuclear matters defense executive. And he said redundancy, resiliency is needed, and that's why that kind of two-site approach was recommended. I mean, if something happens at one site, mm-hmm. the other site can pick up the slack.
Probably also maybe like motivates them a little bit more to make sure that their site's going to get to where it needs to be, because, you know, if all of a sudden SRS doesn't get where it needs to be to produce these pits, but Los Alamos is actually producing a couple or a dozen a year, or mm-hmm. vice versa, and then you have a new administration come in with a different plan for, you know,
that's the
modernization.
Other,
I mean, it could flip. And
the,
you know,
flip-flopping of administrations is definitely something to keep an eye on, especially with these multi-billion dollar, decades long mm-hmm. kind of projects, because temperaments can change.
So it's a matter of something you want to kind of lock into and then try and show some milestones being accomplished while you do it, so mm-hmm. you don't get on the chopping block mm-hmm. like MOX. So, You know, will it become another MOX? We don't know.
I guess everyone's
trying to be optimistic, I guess. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot remains to be seen. But
There are critics, of course, mm-hmm. that don't want pit production to come to SRS or to South Carolina. And the main concern there is waste, kind of the security threat, that sort of thing. I mean, it would be a very big nuclear project.
And I want to wrap up, but you mentioned in one of your articles that Senator Tim Scott was mm-hmm. a little skeptical about that too. Is that any reason behind that?
That came up when he was interviewing William Buklis, Trump's pick to be the NNSA's second in command. He cited the DOE's track record on big projects. He was basically leery because of that track record, mm-hmm. the senator said. And I interviewed Senator Lindsey Graham the other week or day in Greenville, and he basically said he wasn't confident in DOE at all, like at all. And he kind of questioned the Pitt mission. I don't have the exact quote pulled up right now, but he said, we'll see if that's even real, something mm-hmm. to that. So there's definitely skepticism out there, even in the official capacity.
Wow. So definitely a lot to keep an eye on. So definitely keep up with Colin Demarest reporting out of the Aiken Standard as SRS potentially looks at this new mention dealing with pit production, and we continue to see what comes out from the congressional delegation in the federal level. Colin, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me talk about this very niche beat that I have.
Well, you know, you've been covering for so long, people need to know what the heck's going on down there.
Yeah, I think so, at least.
Yeah, I mean, just got a couple tons of plutonium hanging around. You want to kind of maybe know about that. Thanks.
Thank you.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020-related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. And just a heads up, with all the candidates coming through South Carolina, we'll be putting together mini Trail Bite episodes that will come out in addition to our weekly lead episodes. So those will drop weekly to catch you up on which candidates have come through South Carolina, what they are saying, and what people on the ground think of them so far. So stay tuned. The Associated Press reports that the first two Democratic presidential debates for the 2020 election will have two heats with room for a total of 20 candidates who meet certain polling or grassroots fundraising thresholds. A senior Democratic National Committee official outlined the framework for the June and July events. Candidates can qualify by reaching 1% support in at least three national or early primary state polls. They can also qualify by collecting campaign donations from at least 65,000 individuals, with at least 200 unique donors in at least 20 states. And there was a split among the South Carolina delegation over the government funding bill last week that includes $1.375 billion for physical barriers at the southern border, with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham voting yes along with Democratic Representatives Joe Cunningham and Jim Clyburn. Voting no for the budget deal to keep the government open was Republican Senator Tim Scott and Representatives Joe Wilson, Jeff Duncan, William Timmons, and Tom Rice. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is back with me with some state trivia? Well, he is. Russ, thanks for being here.
Glad to be back.
And just so everyone knows, Russ will be with us in Greenwood this Thursday at our live taping at TW Boone's, February 21st at 6 p.m. So come out.
Yeah.
Russ will have some great trivia. He always gets the crowd riled up. You get to see what I get to put up with. So, Russ, yeah, let's get a little preview. What we got?
Well, we've been talking this podcast about the Savannah River site. You know, it was created in the 1950s by the Atomic Energy Commission, specifically to build nuclear or then atomic bombs. Of course, it was called the Savannah River Plant. I remember folks of my father's age actually just simply referred to it as the bomb plant, and you knew they were talking about the Savannah River plant. A huge facility there, taking land from three counties, Barnwell, Allendale, and Aiken, of course. I think people overlook sometimes that at its peak, there were 40,000 to 50,000 people a day at that facility. They're four-lane Wow. Roads that crisscross or used to crisscross through the facility. A lot of South Carolinians were displaced when the Savannah River plant was built and had to move into other areas. The government paid them market value for their homes, mm-hmm. but people that didn't own homes, they were renting or whatever, or were just kind of working day jobs, they kind of suffered. One community, one town, now a city, simply up and moved. All the residents, businesses, probably the post office at some point, simply moved to another site. That town or city would be A, Earhart, B, Elko, C, Ellenton, D, Edgefield.
Earhart.
Earhart.
Elko.
Elko. Ellenton.
Ellington.
Ellenton. Edgefield.
But I feel like it's been mentioned in some of those, you know, those documentaries about the bomb.
This is pretty easy.
I don't want to
visualize the map.
I can't. I need to study the map.
Earhart, Elko, Ellington.
I haven't heard of any of those other ones.
Oh, really?
Not Amelia Earhart.
Same spelling.
But I feel like at the same time, this is one of those places that up and moves and then poof. But if the only one that stands out to me that I know is Edgefield. Field.
Okay. So the correct answer is C, Ellington.
I liked Ellington.
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 E-L-L-E-N-T-O-N. Hey. All the residents moved and formed New Ellington, a city now in Aiken County that was originally located within
well,
the...
Well, see, I didn't know it was new. I was going for just Ellington.
It was Ellington.
Yeah, but when you put new on it, then it becomes a different city, so I just assumed it wasn't the same Ellington that I'm familiar with.
Ellington.
We'll get a pronouncer's guide out here. Are any of those other cities anything important, or did you just make them up? Or are they actually
they're actual places.
To all of our listeners in Earhart and Elko.
And Edgefield.
Well, I know that. I guessed Edgefield. Welcome. Thanks, Russ.
My pleasure.
We'll see you Thursday.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, Spotify, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at SCLEDEPOD. You can find photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at SCLEDPOD. We have swag, sticker swag, that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter and Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Aiken Standard. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia on February 18th, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. How was your Valentine's Day?
Mine, I don't care. It's not a big deal. It's not even a real holiday. It doesn't matter. Trail Bite episodes are not edible.